Hey, how's it going, everyone? It's Mr. Warren Hayes here once again, back with the AEW Dynamite review. We're going to be reviewing the March 1st edition, 2023, of course, of AEW Dynamite. The go-home show to AEW Revolution. Some stuff to unpack. We're going to get to that in a second. But before we step forward into the void anymore, like the video, subscribe to the channel if you're watching this right now on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. All these little things help out a great bit. And you know what? Here's the good thing. You never miss out on any content. Never miss out on any. Did you miss out on the Mr. Warren Hayes show this week? Well, that's because you weren't subscribed. Did you miss out on my AEW Revolution preview? Well, that's because you're not subscribed. So remedy that. Get that out of the way. And if you're listening on your favorite podcast application right now, thank you very much. Follow and subscribe and all that stuff there. And, think about a five-star review on Spotify, five-star rating on Spotify and a five-star review on Apple Podcasts. Right now, I was checking the data earlier today. More people consume the Mr. Warren Hayes show in podcast form on Spotify than on any other platform. So something good's going on there. Plus, you also get the video on Spotify, which is pretty dope. So there you go. Appreciated a great deal to begin with. But we're coasting into AEW Revolution this weekend. As I mentioned, my AEW review preview, the review is going to come next week. But the preview is available. It's already out there. It's on the channel. It's on the podcast feed. I break down every match, give you my thoughts, at least up until I recorded that last weekend. So the only match that isn't on the card that has been officially announced as of when I'm recording right now, which is on March 2nd, was Christian Cage versus Jungle Boy. That's the only match that was off. It hadn't been announced yet. I had predicted that it was probably going to be added. I mean, you know, not that big of a stretch, not a huge prediction. You know, anyone with two eyes could see that one coming, I think. So I've got that lined up. You can go check that out. So I'm not necessarily going to spend a lot of time here today breaking down the card. One thing that I didn't talk about is pay-per-view buys, right? And I did a little research before popping in here just to make sure, you know, just to see how far we were going to go with this. And if we're looking at, you know, the numbers for AEW so far last year, because there's still, you know, there's still some reporting that still has to come in, right? Sometimes when it comes to pay-per-view buys coming in from cable networks and the ilk, might take a little more time. As it stands right now, you know, we have Forbidden Door that did 140,000 buys, All Out, which is around that, 140,000 buys as well. Revolution last year did 175,000 buys, but as we had indicated, the pay-per-view buys in general for AEW would be going into a bit of a downtick, wouldn't necessarily be as high as last year's for multiple reasons, one including CM Punk. I think that is probably the most important reason. I'm mentioning this when I did a little research. There's still no like hard estimate that's been put out there regarding the buys for Full Gear, and the only thing we still have to go by is the December 5th, 2022 edition of The Observer. When Dave noted that Tony Khan had talked about 140,000 buys after the show, which was based, of course, on preliminary data, right? Then, as Dave mentioned, internally, they started getting streaming numbers that indicated closer to 130,000, but none of those included television buy estimates. And since then, we haven't heard anything really substantial in regards to how many buys Full Gear did 2022. So where does that leave us? Let's say if we were to throw a ballpark figure out there and see, well, you know, this, you know, where, Warren, where do you think we're going to stand as far as buys go? Well, look, since Revolution 2022, AEW pay-per-view buys have been on a downtrend. 175,000 for Revolution, 165 for Double or Nothing. Forbidden Door was 140, and so was All Out. There's still data apparently incomplete here, but those are the estimates we have right now. Now, if we use Dave's information here, his estimates, where he's talking about 130 as opposed to Tony's 140,000, Dave seems to say, well, it's going to be more around 130, but those didn't include television buys. I don't know exactly how that can, how significant that could sway the number. Can we get up to 140,000 buys? Maybe. Maybe. Let's say for argument's sake. Full Gear, which was a well put together pay-per-view. Well built. MJF's crowning moment on top of that. So there was a lot of reasons to want to watch, to tune into that one. I thought there were a lot of... there was a lot of good stuff on the pay-per-view. It was a very good show. Will that... let's say for argument's sake, let's say we do a middle of the road here. We say Full Gear 2022 did 135,000 buys. Would it be safe to say that... Revolution this year might do better? Would it do more than 135,000 last year? As we recall, did 175,000. I don't think we're not even close to touching that, I would say. But I think I would be a little optimistic in this circumstance here. I wouldn't be surprised if this pay-per-view, if the buys here did very well, because I think MJF and Bryan Danielson is a very strong main event. And then you add on Jon Moxley and Adam Page, who are going to go to war. I think you have some really strong, you have a really strong top of the card. You know, I would say, I wouldn't be surprised at all if the downtrend sort of stops here. And we hit another 140,000 buys, I would even go as to say it'll probably do a little better than that. It'll probably do maybe around 145,000. Again, if we're just basing our information on, 130 on the supposition that Full Gear did around 135,000 buys, I think this is going to go higher. I'm going to go with 145,000 buys. I think this pay-per-view has fans excited for this. I think the AEW fans are excited about this show. Because the card's going to be really great. There's a lot of good stuff on the card. As I mentioned, there's some stuff that's questionable, but the things that I think the attractions are very strong here. MJF, Danielson, of course, for the AEW World Championship, the 60-minute Iron Man match, that's going to be at the top of the card. Hangman Page versus Jon Moxley, Texas Death Match, I think that's another strong one. The Elite and the House of Black for the AEW Trios Championship. Don't let the fact that the build has been soft here fool you. This is a match that people are excited to see. Got some crowd favorites in here like the Acclaimed, Jungle Boy. I think Chris Jericho and Ricky Starks has enough people interested. I think this is going to do very well. And it's going to do very well off of the strengths of just a couple of matches. Because this is an AEW pay-per-view where, you know, for me, there are two matches on this card that I have very little interest in. I have one that I have no interest in, which is the four-way tag team shenanigans. And the women's match, the fact that it's a three-way, don't call it a triple threat, just bothers me. And it takes away a lot of the luster away from me. Why couldn't Jamie Hayter just have one candidate, one challenger coming straight for her? I don't know. Why did we have to make this into a triple threat? So listen, 140 to 145,000 buys. Because I think the top of the card is very strong. I think it is terribly strong. I think a lot of people are excited about it. I think the fans are excited about this. We'll see how wrong I am next week or in a couple of weeks or so. But I mean, in my defense, I'm trying to make a prediction with some incomplete data because, you know, I'm sort of winging it when it comes to Full Gear 2022's buys. I'm sort of going, And Full Gear seems to have done in the same vicinity as All Out and Forbidden Door. And All Out's number surprised me. I didn't think it was going to do as good as it did. So we'll see what happens. But let's get to it. Let's get into the card. Let's start talking about last night's Dynamite. March 1st, 2023, from the Cow Palace in San Francisco, the historic Cow Palace. Show opened up with Orange Cassidy defeating Big Bill. Big Bill steps up to Orange Cassidy, who just rolls away. And Orange Cassidy is doing all sorts of mind games here. He's rolling out of the ring. He's avoiding contact. Suddenly, I'm like, if there was one guy who could bring back the Zbyszko 7-minute stall, it could be Orange Cassidy. But eventually, Bill side slams him hard and kicks him to the floor. Bill and Stokely Hathaway set up the timekeeper's table, and Cassidy gets choke slammed right through it. Big Bill tosses Orange Cassidy to the floor, distracts the ref so that Stokely can get some licks in. That brings down Danhausen. Meanwhile, in the ring, there's a full Nelson that's applied on Orange Cassidy. He releases it and goes for a boot. But Orange Cassidy just drops on his ass, just sits down on the mat. Stokely clocks Danhausen with the cast. Suicide dive by Orange Cassidy follows. Orange punch to Big Bill's leg. He wants to try and clip it. Goes for a drop kick on the floor. Big Bill lands on the steps. Back in the ring, we get a Stun Dog Millionaire and a Satellite DDT. Orange punch lands, connects with Big Bill, but he stays up on his feet. Orange Cassidy goes for a second one. He's still up on his feet. But then he goes to the top rope and does a diving Orange punch, which puts Big Bill away. Orange Cassidy retains. Look, this match was, I enjoyed it. Look, hot opener, the crowd was into it. Yeah, I think there's always something smart about starting up a card with Orange Cassidy. He really is one of the most over acts in the company. And not only that, there are two wrestlers right now in this company over the past few months have been absolute workhorses for AEW, have been incredible players for the company, being thrown out there into situations, into matches, and delivering every time, just being consistent, solid, doing what they need to do and doing it well, entertaining. And one of them is Orange Cassidy. Delivers every time. And he carries, he's been carrying a lot of weight on a mid-card that sometimes needs a little spark. He's always there. He's reliable. Great work on multiple levels. Character work, interest. This All-Atlantic title feels significant, feels important, because Orange Cassidy has been taking on all comers for months at this point. He's been just going out there wrestling and putting on, look, he's going to have the, he's had the occasional goofball act. But when it's time to work, Orange Cassidy turns it up and starts working. Not unlike his match with Wheeler Yuta last week. This guy's been on television practically every week. If it's not on Dynamite, it's on Rampage. An absolute workhorse. The All-Atlantic title, for all intents and purposes right now, really feels like the second biggest belt in the company. But that's not what it's supposed to be. But Cassidy's out there every week. Almost every week. It's being defended. It's being coveted. Feels important. He's coming off as a dominant champion. This has been well done. This has been well booked. And Orange Cassidy has been just stellar in this role. Absolutely fantastic. We get a pre-tape from Mox. Cut a promo after his match with Evil Uno last week. And it ruled. It just ruled. He's bloody. His face is, it has the crimson mask. He's bleeding so much. And it's still so fresh. It's dripping onto the cement floor. He's in a hallway, in a staircase, dimly lit staircase. The grayest and blandest of environments, his voice is echoing, not unlike mine now. And it's the rawest, most real thing. And this is why, to me, John Moxley was my wrestler of the year because there is no one who makes me feel like this is professional wrestling like he does. No one even comes close. He says he likes the violence because he's a sick man. Clearly referencing his old classic, I'm a sick guy promo. I got huge Terry Funk vibes off of this. And it all ruled. It all ruled. If you needed an excuse, one more excuse to buy this pay-per-view, it was off the back of this promo here. This match feels incredibly hot. Great stuff. I'm excited for it. Then we cut back to the arena where the Elite line up for their entrances, for their entrance, I should say. They only do one. But the lights go out, and then they get blindsided by the House of Black, who lay them out in the darkness, and then they claim the Trios title. Then they, a little later on in the evening, this doesn't happen immediately after, but since we're talking about it now, might as well get it out of the way. A little later in the evening, the House of Black, they cut one of their dark promos about the titles, something about souls or whatnot, and they just leave the titles on the floor as they leave. I know there are a lot of people who are very annoyed with how this match has been built up. I know tons of people are super annoyed with it. Why? Because it's the Elite. Why? Because it's the House of Black, and both of these, all six of these people have ravenous fan bases who want more and more of them all the time. So I can understand that. But look at this, look at the card here. Let's say we just consider the championships on Revolution. You got the world title, you got the tag team titles, you got the women's world title, you have the TNT title, and then you have the Trios title. Arguably, the Trios title is the least prestigious of the three. It's the newer title, right? Of the five. So the match is basically like fifth from the top. I mean, this is of a fine build. What more do you want from a match which is clearly set in the mid card? You know, yes, Warren, the match will probably open the show. Absolutely. The match, if I'm you and you're me, and I'm starting Revolution off, and I want people to get hot and hyper out the gate, yeah, I'm starting this off with the Elite and the House of Black. And that's the other thing. It's like, not only I feel is the build, not only do I feel it's been adequate for the positioning of this match on the card, I don't know what type of build you need to sell me on the House of Black versus the Elite, six extraordinary professional wrestlers who we know are going to absolutely tear it up. What more do you need? What other stakes do you need than this? This one sells itself. So look, the attack happened, adds a little heat to the match. And that's really all you need. Now, I go a little deeper into this on the preview show, which you should check out, of course. I go a little deeper, but nonetheless, this is fine. And the one thing I also think I should underscore before we move on here is that sometimes, and I'm not saying all the time, but sometimes Tony Khan uses the pay-per-views as a springboard to new feuds, new angles, new stories, as opposed to wrapping them up. So I could absolutely see this pay-per-view, not unlike what happened at Full Gear, be a springboard for an Elite House of Black feud for the next few weeks, couple of months. Could absolutely see that happen. Then we get another match. Then we'll move on to it's the Face of the Revolution ladder match, which I came in with two match types on this show, on this Dynamite, which don't always agree with me. And ladder matches, I'm really spent on them. Powerhouse Hobbs defeated AR Fox, Action Andretti, Eddie Kingston, Ortiz, Commander, Kenosuke Takeshita, and Sammy Guevara to become the Face of the Revolution. Samoan Joseph joins commentary for this one because the winner of the ladder match will face the TNT champion next week on Dynamite, depending who wins, of course, this weekend at Revolution, whether it's Samoa Joe or Wardlow. And I like the chaos at first here. I like the chaos at first as opposed to, you know, people slamming each other with ladders and then, you know, having two people do spots, have a one-on-one for a while and then nothing going on. You had stuff going on all around the ring and I like that. That avoids one of the most annoying tropes of multi-person matches. It's like, no, we've got six people in this match, but for the first 4 minutes, it's going to be a one-on-one and then it's going to be another one-on-one. And then, you know, so this is pretty fast paced. You got Eddie Kingston and Ortiz who fight all the way up to the ramp and they're never seen ever again. Powerhouse Hobbs is the guy who starts slowing fools down here though. Hobbs and Takeshita have a slug off. It ends with Takeshita landing a German. We have dives to the floor by Andretti, AR Fox, but the highlight of the match, Commander runs the top rope from the far end of the ring and then springboards sentons off the middle rope onto the floor in a spectacular move. Popped out of my seat. Will Hobbs lands a DVD on A.R. Fox on a ladder bridge that they set up on the floor. Action Andretti flubs a Falcon Arrow on a transversal ladder and Sammy lands hard. Looked a little dangerous, looked a little bad, did not look good for Sammy, but turns out everyone was okay. But that was a complete whiff. And that could have been so much worse. Because I think Sammy's head did hit the ladder because he was supposed to land on the ladder, but Andretti just dropped Sammy next to the ladder. And Sammy's head sort of bounced off of it. It was a little scary. Commander does a shooting star press off the top rope onto AR Fox. AR Fox just ate shit in this match. Takeshita lands a blue thunder bomb off the ladder. Garcia runs in at some point to help out Sammy. Sammy does a swan dive from the tippy top of the ladder onto a transversal ladder construction thing on the floor on which Action Andretti is lying on. Takeshita climbs the ladder, but Hobbs tackles the ladder, knocking Takeshita off and destroying the ladder, looking like it needs spinal reconstruction. Hobbs climbs to the top as the referees hold the ladder in place. Now, I didn't see an issue with this. I didn't see an issue with the referees coming in to hold the ladder in place, a ladder that was just destroyed by Hobbs in a great spot so that Hobbs doesn't fall off and kill himself or hurts himself. I was like, good call, everyone, instead of trying to bring another ladder in and add some time to the show to take away from something, good call, everyone. But then there's discourse around it on the internet. The nerds are all losing their mind off of it. Why are the referees holding the ladder? Because we don't want this is how the match is going to end, and we want the guy to not fall off. This is good thinking. And now suddenly, referees are horrible. It's just terrible. And I don't understand how anyone thinks this is a bad idea or is worthy of any type of commentary. I promise you that, you know, all of these casuals that were supposed to be, you know, talking to, that we're supposed to be attracting, I can guarantee you that not one of them cared about whether or not the referees were holding the ladder. Only nerds did. Anyone was involved in this saying that this was an embarrassment or that, you know, AEW referees are terrible is a nerd. Because the worst part on top of it all is that the ladder was just a little short, or whoever hung the Sonic ring over the ring itself hung it up too high. Hobbs had to go on the final, on the top of the ladder, not the final step, like the actual top of the ladder, you know, where it's written, do not climb on top, you know, that's where he, both feet on top to unhook it. And then he had to be super careful coming back down. You're goddamn right. The referees had to hold on to the ladder. The fuck are we talking about? What are we doing? Nerds. Anyway, after the match, Hobbs is, he's jawjacking with Joe over on commentary. Then Wardlow comes out. Joe takes a powder while Wardlow powerbombs the security guy off the stage. Adds a little heat to the match this weekend. And in the meantime, what do we got? What do we got in the meantime? Well, we have a match already set up for next Wednesday. Well done. We go backstage where Renee Paquette is getting a medical update on Trent and Chuck E. T. Apparently, Trent and Chuck E. T. scheduled to be in the casino tag team battle royale, are not medically cleared. Was there something I missed? Were they attacked? Or is just like we're just pulling this out of our ass? It kind of feels that way. Anyway, they're not medically cleared to wrestle. Also, Danhausen and Orange Cassidy are there. They're with the medical team. Cassidy's being tended to his injuries, the ones that he had against Big Bill. Danhausen offers to take up Trent and Chucky's spot with Cassidy. And Cassidy's like, whatever, even though he's clearly hurt. So they're subbing in for the best friends. Next match we have is Chris Jericho defeating Peter Avalon. Look, see, the nice little logical, a little logic to your jobber match here, where Peter Avalon wanted to come out to accept Ricky Stark's open challenge last week, and Jericho gave him a Judas effect for his trouble. This week, Peter Avalon's like, nah, man, it's not going to go down that way. So he takes it to Jericho, gets a lot of offense here. But Chris Jericho lands the Codebreaker for Peter Avalon for the win. Got that one in. Clearly, Avalon, not in the upper echelons, only needed a Codebreaker to defeat him as opposed to the full-blown Judas effect in the hierarchy of finishers that Jericho has up his sleeve. After the match, though, Jericho beats up on Avalon with his bat. Ricky Starks comes in to make the save. He gets punked out by Dan Garcia and Jake Hager. There was one funny thing about this. Garcia in the beatdown lands a rock bottom on Ricky Starks. And then someone tweets at him and says, hey, I saw you use the rock bottom. And he adds Daniel Garcia, right? So he said, I saw you use the rock bottom. That's pretty cool. Do you have a name for it? Dan Garcia, quote, tweets it and says, the rock bottom. And that just made my entire night. Now, this, you know, it was a squash match. It was for the angle. It's fine. Ricky Starks, some more heat for the Ricky Starks match this weekend against Chris Jericho. And we get a Hangman Adam Page pre-tape, which is not as good as Moxley's. I don't even think it's close to being Hangman's best work. I think it was fine, don't get me wrong. But we have seen Hangman Page cut much better promos than this. And I think he is the kind of promo guy who lights up when he's in front of a live crowd. I think his backstage stuff, his pre-tapes like this are not, they don't connect the same way. They're not quite as good. Anywho, he says he doesn't enjoy violence. He hates it to the core, but he's paid to fight, so he's going to be there. He said it himself, I'm paid, so I'm going to do it. You're a pro fighter. Like, don't come tell me you hate violence. Maybe what he meant was excessive violence. Maybe that's the point he was trying to make. Maybe the point he was trying to make was, you know, but then at the same time, you know, Page has been in brutal fights in AEW. You know, didn't he do a Texas death match with Lance Archer, right? He won that. He's fine. There's something weird about, you know, my pro wrestlers coming out and saying, you know, I don't like to beat people up. It's like, what are we doing here? Of course you do. You know, you develop these skills for a reason. I don't know. Felt a little strange to me. Christian Cage comes to the ring to go hang out with Renee Paquette, who's right there waiting. And this crowd has it in for him. Just some massive heat. Cage cuts an absolutely remarkable promo. Absolutely fantastic. And the crowd is just They want to torch him. They hate him. They love Jungle Boy. He says people like Jack Perry are a dime a dozen, and thankfully he has good looks. Otherwise, his career would be going nowhere. Says he doesn't have what it takes to be a man. Christian Cage says, you know, Jack wants to win a singles title in 2023. And Perry winning one, it'll never happen. It'll only happen over my dead body. He says Jungle Boy wants the title to post things on social media and have memes with the title. He says his generation treats his business, Christian Cage's business, like a video game, whereas Christian Cage treats this business like an ATM, and he's not done milking it dry. And that is the greatest Kaiji Muto tribute I heard in months. Then we cut to a video on the Tonytron where Jack is digging a grave in the headlights of a car. And on the grave, it's written Christian Cage. It is Christian Cage's grave that he's digging. That's on the tombstone. That was a little corny. I'm not going to lie. But you know, what I thought was going to happen was like, I thought he was digging a grave. You know, because here's the thing, right? Christian Cage in this promo here was putting over the fact that Jungle Boy didn't have what it takes. He doesn't have what it takes to be a man, doesn't have what it takes to be a winner, right? And I would have thought here, like, if there would have ever been a good moment to divest yourself of a gimmick, such as being a jungle hero or whatever, a Tarzan type, this would have been it. I thought Jungle Boy would have been in this vignette, would have been in response to these accusations by Christian Cage. I say, and digging the grave and laying the Jungle Boy attire in there and then burying it up and saying, you know, the symbolicness of saying, I am done being Jungle Boy. Now I'm Jack Perry and I'm going to be different. This is going to be different. Right? I thought this is where we were going to go with this, but no, it's like, no, I'm going to boot you in this hole, Christian's Cages. All right, whatever. But listen, Christian's promo, extraordinary, excellent stuff. This guy can't hang around the mid-card too much. I think when it comes to top heels in AEW, he's got to be up there because he is so precise with his promos, to the point, vicious. You feel like there is hate in everything he says. It just works. The crowd eats it up. The crowd hates him every time. Having him languish in the mid-card is a bad idea. We get a quick backstage segment with Britt and Jamie hyping up the upcoming match between Toni Storm and Riho, saying that if Saraya starts some shenanigans, they're going to be there to take care of business. All right, fine. Hook retained the FTW title against Matt Hardy, which also sets that at the pre-show this week, Hook is going to, Stokely Hathaway is going to have to step into the ring against Hook. Which is interesting. Personally, I thought this match was a little sloppy. Look, I like Hook as much as the next guy, but you know, he's still a rookie. He's still quite green. And I've mentioned this a couple of times. Hook has a lot of naturals, has a lot of great attributes, but you know, he's in his first wrestling matches ever here. One of the reasons I thought Jungle Hook was such a good idea for him was because he could showcase his strengths, get some more reps in, be the Robert Gibson to Jungle Boy's Ricky Morton. Look, this is where we're at right now. I think Hook still has a way to go. Matt Hardy goes for a twist of fate, which Hook reverses into a Taz mission for the win. The red rum, excuse me. More of an angle than an actual match, but they tried to make it, and The idea was to make this into a match. And it was under 5 minutes, and it still ended up being a little iffy. Riho, the true needle mover. She's back. Defeated Toni Storm here. Storm attacks Riho from the get-go and slams her down. Riho lands a snap suplex in response and a dropkick. Locks in a crossface. Toni Storm lands a hip attack, distracts the ref, which allows Saraya to land a knee strike, which then conjures up Hater and Britt from backstage. Storm has a heat segment, which ends with a head scissors takedown by Riho and a diving crossbody to the floor. Riho hits the coup de grace and Northern Lights. Goes for a sunset bomb, but it's blocked. Toni Storm hits a shotgun dropkick and a hip attack. Locks in the clover leaf, but Toni Storm distracts, which allows Riho to roll up for the win. After the match, Toni Storm and Britt Baker brawl at ringside. Jamie and Saraya go at it in the ring. Ruby Soho runs in and punks out Saraya, but also lands one on Jamie. So we get a big pull-apart brawl here. And I kind of feel like the only one who really felt comfortable in this pull-apart situation was Jamie. Because she was raring to go. Anyway, look, I enjoyed this match. I thought it was a lot of fun. Thought it was well worked. Remember when I was talking about Orange Cassidy earlier? When I was talking about workhorses in the company, I said there were two. Here's the second one, Toni Storm. Well, Jamie Hayter is the best pro wrestler that they have on this on the show. She is fantastic. I think Toni Storm is the best. She is an absolute workhorse for this company right now. She has been outstanding. Outstandingly good. From the minute that she came in, won the title, she had a great run. Great defenses, good matches. And again, here's someone else who comes out every other week, it seems, just to land great matches, one after the other. And work! Carrying a lot of weight. Her contribution over the past, 12 months or so, cannot be understated. She has been nothing but fantastic. A lot of some big MVP vibes from Toni Storm and Orange Cassidy. Keith Lee and Dustin Rhodes cut a promo backstage, on the Mogul affiliates. They're going to be fighting at Rampage this week. And we get the Casino Battle Royal. What do you want from me? This is a battle royal. Danhausen and Orange Cassidy won. This top flight Aussie Open. Glad to see Aussie Open back in there. They lasted longer than I thought they were going to, which is good. Angelo Parker, Matt Menard, Alex Reynolds, John Silver, The Kingdom, Matt Taven, Mike Bennett, Preston Vance and Roosh, Claudio Castagnoli and Wheeler Yuta, The Lucha Brothers, and The Butcher and the Blade. Last two teams are Butcher and the Blade and Cassidy and Danhausen, and it's Danhausen who dumps Butcher and the Blade. There's post-match shenanigans with the heels, and the from the four-way match, and the Acclaim come in. Well, I can't be bothered with this. Like, if there is, I talked about it on the prediction show. You know, I was like, what if it's FTR who comes in here? Because I feel like that four-way match needs some sparkle. It needs some star power. You got FTR hanging around, you know, bitching about AEW, on their podcasts. And I'm like, this work is starting to feel like a worky work. It's starting to feel like a work. And what if they show up this week? They didn't. I was a little disappointed. And I feel like the four-way match has nothing going for it. It doesn't interest me. It's a four-way match. It's got nothing for me. And this match here, the Casino Tag Team Battle Royal, I thought it dragged. I thought this was not good. I absolutely think this is a low point of the show. But to wrap it up, we got a hell of a high point. Got a video package to hype up MJF versus Bryan Danielson this week. And then we end with a very rare main event promo, which was a good gamble and a great call. Renee Paquette is joined by Bryan Danielson in the ring. Danielson starts to talk. MJF's music hits, starts to walk out. He's got a mic, but Danielson is not letting MJF hijack this time. And he tells Max to shut the hell up even before Max has the time, has the opportunity to say anything. And Danielson just unloads. Says MJF has taken every shortcut to become world champion. And if there's one thing he deserves, it's his fiance leaving him. Oh! MJF looks like he wants to fight, you know, takes off his jacket, and Danielson, like, come on, come fight me. I've been fighting all my life. Poverty, depression, head injuries, shoulder injuries, retirement, the authority. I love that he let that slip in. He says, before he came here, he had a job that would have paid him for the rest of his life, but he came to AEW because he wanted to fight. And since he's been here, his dream is to become AEW World Champion. So MJF better be ready to fight with everything he has for 60 minutes. Because if he doesn't, he'll get his fucking head kicked in. MJF, top promo guy in the company, reduced to silence, did not say a word. Bryan Danielson carried this promo from top to bottom. This is an example of why I like to tell people that I believe Bryan Danielson is the greatest North American wrestler to ever do it. It's not just a question of athletic ability, his skill, his technique, his unparalleled technique, his peerless technique. It's because of this. Then you have your boss, the booker, who comes to you and hands you a microphone and says, look, MJF has been cutting all the promos. We got to spice it up a little bit. Here's the mic. Go sell the show. Go sell some tickets. And that's exactly what he did. His promo was extraordinary. Fiery, excellent. Look, I'm not sitting here telling you that Danielson is the most charismatic pro wrestler, like naturally charismatic pro wrestler of all time. I'm not saying he's the greatest promo of all time, but he is a guy that when it's time, he understands the business, he understands the audience, he knows how this works. So when the boss says, when the booker man says, go out there, sell some tickets, he grabs the mic and he does exactly that. He's going to empty out everything he's got to get you excited for his pro wrestling match. Nothing about this build has been bad. And anyone who tries to tell you that it was is bad faith. This has been an excellent build from top to bottom and has been exciting the whole way through. And we're ending on a note where everyone expected the minute MJF came out, oh, well, here we go again. But it was all the opposite, and it was just as entertaining. And MJF was reduced to silence because Danielson was just spitting truths, as the kids say. Just saying real things about him over and over, about his character. This is, you're like this because you're acting like this. You hate me because of this, because of this. You know I'm a better wrestler than you, and it bothers you, even though you're the champion. This has been pristine pro wrestling build. This is how your main event should be built. This is how your main event should feel. This was great. I am excited for this match. And I have been excited every week moving forward between Danielson giving us match after match after match of just glee and excellence. Every time. Week after week. on our TV, and leading into the show, getting extraordinary promos from a guy from whom you expect nothing less, being MJF, and then Danielson just coming out and knocking it out of the park. And don't forget, what is it, like a little over a year ago, Danielson was being sent out to do the same thing for Hangman Adam Page, except he was told, you got to heal it up, pal, because this is our ace. This is our star. And what was he? He was going out there and cutting exquisite heel promos. I'm telling you, I am not kidding when I say that this is probably the greatest North American pro wrestler of all time. Overall, I thought this show was fine. Didn't blow me away. Go home show. There was enough on this. There was enough really, really great stuff to not have me here sitting down saying this was boring. I'm going to bury it. There's too much good stuff. I thought the ladder match was really good. I thought the opener was electric, was fun. Promos on this match, on this card, man. They're just outstanding stuff. And again, you know, look, I have a propensity to really hate main event promos. I really do. That's a natural inflection that I have, a penchant for disliking them. But, you know, if AEW does them sparingly like they do here, and they are home runs like this, I don't have a problem. And if this becomes a regular thing every week, every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, let's have another discussion. But I don't even remember when was the last time a Dynamite did not end with a match. Well, this review is not going to end with a match because I can't wrestle. I'm afraid of pain. So I'm going to wrap it up there. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today, whether it is on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes or on your favorite podcast feed. I appreciate it a great deal. I will be back on Tuesday for another edition of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. So like the video and consider subscribing if you don't want to miss anything, or follow me on your podcast feed of choice, podcast application of choice. Enjoy AEW Revolution. You should watch my review next. You really should. Have you watched it already? You should watch it again. Otherwise, have a great rest of your week, and I'll see you next time.